Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. On, clinical sexologist with Xander Keg, licensed social worker. Xander will introduce our guest.
Yes, I will, Dr. On, and I'm really, really looking forward to this interview. I mean, I look forward to every interview, but I'm really looking forward to this one because this is somebody that we both know and we have known for a number of years. So I will introduce him right now. His name is Willie Chang Wilkinson. He has a master's in public health, and he's also an award-winning author and speaker, public health consultant, cultural competency trainer, spoken word performer, and editor and publisher. He is the author of Gender Splendor, 50 Creative Sparks to Celebrate Yourself at All Ages and Stages, and also the Lambda Literary Award-winning book, Born on the Edge of Race and Gender, A Voice for Cultural Competency. For 35 years, Willie has helped hundreds of healthcare institutions, businesses, educational institutions, and other audiences be more effective through practical skills built on creating LGBTQ-affirming settings. He received an Association of LGBTQ+ Journalists Excellence in Journalism Award and the Transgender Law Center Vanguard Award. You can learn more about Willie at his website, www.williewilkinson, that's WILKINSON.com. Willie, welcome to the show.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for the invitation. It's great to be here. And great to see you both, even though I know in podcast land, we can't see each other.
This is true. I mentioned briefly that we are all familiar with each other. We know each other. It's interesting. I moved to Jacksonville, Florida from California, and I met On. And I didn't realize that I had met On previously when Manning Up was published. And On was in San Francisco to record you, videotape you reading from your chapter. And so I thought it'd be fun for us to do a little bit of how we know each other other than that.
When I think about it, Xander, we know each other in a lot of different ways. In your time in San Francisco, I know when the Affordable Care Act came into effect in 2014, we were doing workshops in the community, talking to folks about how they could get their surgery covered under health insurance, which was groundbreaking and pretty phenomenal at the time, and continues to be in the state of California, something we still have access to, which has not been the case for other states. I know we were doing that. We did workshops at Gender Spectrum. Remember, we were doing writing workshops for parents of trans kids and trans young people. I know we presented on various panels. And then, Manning Up is an anthology that was pretty interesting, really great anthology. And I know we were doing that too, various different readings and speaking engagements and so forth, as well as you just being an all-around great guy I've hung out with. So it's pretty fun to think about that. And then On, I know we met when you interviewed me for your film, but then also I know you brought me out to do training for various organizations in Jacksonville and the University of Florida, right?
University of North Florida.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun too, being able to spend time with you both in the Bay and in Florida doing that work. It's great to make the connections and great that you're doing this amazing podcast now.
Public health. You've done a lot of work in public health. You have a master's degree in public health. What was the motivation for going into the field of public health?
Well, I love working in community. I love the way in which we can help communities come together to support each other in a broad way. And I think about the concept of public health. It's about community responsibility, something that people often misunderstood just on the concept of mask wearing with the COVID pandemic. For instance, not just about us as individuals, but it's us as communities. I started out with folks on the streets of the Tenderloin, people who were running out, doing drugs and engaging in survival sex work just to survive on the streets of the Tenderloin. Everybody was out there. There were a lot of trans folks out there. And that's what I was doing in the early days of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, talking to folks about HIV prevention, providing crisis intervention services and resources for folks. We were handing out bleach and condoms and having conversations with folks about transmission, correcting misconceptions that people might have had about casual transmission, helping people stay safe, coming from a non-judgmental place. We weren't there to tell anybody what to do. If you're going to do it, be safe. And I think that really taught me a lot. It became known as harm reduction, although we didn't have that language at the time. And folks started a needle exchange in 1988 in San Francisco. And I was doing work with folks on the street who were working with primarily injection drug users and sex workers. So that's how I got involved in public health. And I just loved talking to people and being on the street. Not this idea of when looking down on folks or asking folks to come to them, but it was an idea of meeting people where they're at on the street, street-based outreach. And I loved that model, which was really new at the time. And over the years, I've worked a lot in Asian Pacific Islander communities. I've worked in various capacities around HIV/AIDS, but over time really became a public health consultant and have worked with so many different fields now around creating LGBTQ affirming settings. I've worked a lot with behavioral health clinicians, medical providers, nursing, people in public health, but also so much in educational institutions, which is very much on my mind now with this horrible tragedy of Next Benedict being attacked in a high school bathroom and dying the next day in the state of Oklahoma. That's something I'm thinking about in terms of creating LGBTQ affirming schools. And I've worked with universities. I've worked with businesses on creating more affirming workplaces. Currently, I've been doing more work with criminal justice, cops on the streets, juvenile detention, prison systems, reentry programs. And so it's been interesting as a consultant, as a freelancer, I've really had the opportunity to work with so many different fields. And that has kept it really interesting. And also, I think so many of the same issues come up, even though they need to be customized for the particular work setting, the populations served, and the ways in which people interact and work with communities. So many of the same issues come up in these settings.
When you're in these settings and you're doing your work, what does that look like? Are you presenting workshops? Are you doing assessments or evaluations? Give us an idea about what the work looks like that you're doing.
I always conducted needs assessment prior to going in as a trainer to really understand, at least from one or two people's perspective. And when I get to the group, I might hear other things, but to get a sense of what might the issues be in their organization or institution, what challenges are coming up, so then I can then create learning objectives or exercises that meet certain learning objectives that don't point the finger at anyone in particular, but really try to address the challenges that are coming up. And it's really about helping folks build awareness and develop their knowledge, and then really looking at best practices and practical skills building. So creating interactive exercises so people have an opportunity to practice in small groups how they might navigate a scenario, and then talking about it in the large group, and then looking at action steps. Where do we go from here? So that energy can take folks forward as an organization. A lot of times people will realize that they're not all on the same page when they have that conversation, that they don't have clear policy and procedures around these issues. And so part of what I've done has been technical assistance in helping people develop policy, educational materials, procedures, intake forms, for instance, different ways to put this in concrete form. And in different settings, it depends on the situation. Like in universities, I train their mental health providers, their medical providers, present a keynote, meet with the students over dinner, or we have a conversation in a group. And those kinds of interactions have been a lot of fun because I'm working with folks at different parts of the system. I really love my work. I love doing trainings. I love doing speaking engagements. And also workshops. I know you and I have worked a little bit in doing writing workshops. And now with my new book, I'm expecting to do a lot of writing workshops using art as a healing tool. How can we transform the pain, the grief, the loss, the challenges that we may be dealing with into creative expression? That's a little bit what I'm getting into now too, but I've been doing trainings for 35 years. I love it. And that's a lot of what I get the call for. It's not a lecture, using it as an opportunity to problem solve on the challenges that may be coming up.
I've seen you in action. And what I loved was your style. You were so laid back and relaxed that spilled over onto the audience who were able to really hear you. And I remember we pulled away and we were in this little section at UNF. Remember that? There was the parent and this trans youth who was battling being accepted. And there were some issues there. Nothing unusual, I suppose, for families having to struggle with their inner views about their children. You were so good with that youth. And to observe that, it really made a difference. I can't even tell you how it all played out, unfortunately. You did such a nice job in helping them connect a little more openly and honestly.
Thank you so much, John. Yeah, I mean, it's all about how can we understand each other better. And I think particularly in working with youth, and that comes up a lot, working with folks who are in behavioral health and in education, the challenges around folks who really are great allies and want to support youth, and then family members who may not understand. Having those conversations where one person is calling the young person by one name and a set of pronouns, and the family member is using a different name and pronouns. And how can people who are in those roles working with young people really help families bridge those gaps in understanding?
I love hearing about that non-confrontational way of working with people. You've referred to it as not finger pointing, and the ability to de-escalate, because emotions are going to run high in certain situations, especially with young people, and not being referred to in the way they want to by the people around them, and how to be the person that can get in there and intervene, or at least provide some resources for that, so that from a mental health perspective, I worry about the rupture that can happen in a family if the clinician aligns with the young client against the parent. And unfortunately, that does happen. I hope it's not common, but I have heard of it happening, and I worry about that. So I like this way of find a way to bring this non-confrontational or grace into the dynamic in order to work to preserve that family, unit there.
Right. And this is a question I often get by providers and educators about how to navigate these conversations, listening to the young person and what their needs are in those conversations, and how might they want that provider educated to speak to their family member? What feels important for them? Do they want them to use the name they have chosen they want to go by? Or is that uncomfortable at this point in time? Allowing the young person to help direct that experience. One other thing I remember, though, about that training was we did have a spicy moment. And my job as a trainer is to navigate these spicy moments in ways that, and spicy because someone says, I don't get it. I don't support it. You people shouldn't be that way. It was a very much an anti-trans message that did actually feel like a personal attack. A lot of times it's attack on the general population, but it was coming off of me sharing something about being trans. In those moments, really my job to manage any sort of emotional response I might have and really allow the group to respond. And there were certainly a number of people who had a lot to say who really wanted to respond to that. Oh, no, 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 you don't get to tell us, while navigating that in a time management way so it doesn't derail. Those things are always learning opportunities. When someone says something that really is showing their lack of understanding or appreciation for the topic or the folks in the community. And so I do remember that there was definitely a spicy moment at that training.
That was a tough case.
Yeah. Later in the bathroom, it was like, okay, here we are.
That's awesome. I developed that skill set for being challenged in front of the room when I was in charge of a speakers bureau at my college campus. It was the GLBT Student Services Office, and we had a speakers bureau, and I was the coordinator for it. And so professors would invite us to come in and speak. And when I would do the training for the speakers, I would say, listen, people are going to say things that you're not going to like. And it's not going to be helpful to just go off on them or storm out of the room or completely freeze up and fall apart. So we would role play how to respond to negative comments. And one of the things that we would teach them is to find a way to affirm the underlying emotion of what they're saying, if at all possible. Well, it sounds like you have some fear about blah, blah, blah. Or, well, it sounds like the experience you've had has been unsettling for you. And then move on to, in my experience, this is what has happened. And then again, time management, move on. But so to not directly fight with the person, right, to just say something else and then move on. And it works. Not every time, of course. There are people who it won't work with, but it tends to work most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's your brilliance as a social worker too, coming through, right? It's like honoring the emotion in the moment. Yeah.
I love being a social worker, and I've enjoyed my career as a social worker, but I got to tell you, in my second year of my 2-year MSW program, in the second semester, so I'm about to graduate, basically done everything I need to do. I've even passed my comprehensive examination in order to graduate. And lo and behold, the School of Social Work was in a larger college that was part of a university. And part of our college was nursing and also the MPH program. And so we had a professor from the public health school come over to the School of Social Work and talk to us about the public health career and what it was like. And I remember she talked and then we went on a break and I went outside and I looked at some of the other social work students. Do you get the feeling maybe you chose the wrong major? And they were like, oh my God. Like there was something we were drawn to the public health. And some of our students were MSW-MPH students. It was an offered dual degree major. But there was something about it. And I thought, oh, shoot, that's what I wanted to do. I hope I can do that as a social worker. And it took me a number of years to do the actual work that I wanted to do when I entered into the field. It was circuitous, but I found my way to it. So I'm happy about that. You mentioned your books. Let's talk about your books. So there's the recent one, Gender Splendor. And you had talked about how that's going to give you an opportunity to do some workshops. So want to hear about that. But then there's also the Born on the Edge of Race and Gender, which was an award-winning book, Lambda Literary Award. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Born on the Edge of Race and Gender first? What prompted you to write that book? And what was that process like? What did you write about? And how it's been since then, because when you, especially when you win an award, it gets you attention. And so how's that been for you?
Well, great. I know you both were very supportive of that book as well. And that book came out in 2015. It was really my drive to use memoir as a cultural competency tool. How can we use the power of storytelling to show the personal and how that relates to the broader political implications, the public health implications? How can we learn from personal experience to create affirming settings in education, healthcare, business, and so forth? So that was really my drive to do it. I'm a mixed heritage person. So like me, the book was mixed genre. There was poetry, prose, and more journalistic expository writing. And it was fun. I'll talk a minute about the new book, Gender Splendor, but Gender Splendor was inspired by some of the metaphors that I used to write with in Born on the Edge of Race and Gender. And I've done a lot of work in relation to that book, whether it was trainings or keynotes, working with colleges, universities, K through 12, as well as so many behavioral health clinicians, mental health providers, medical providers, med schools, various engagements that have been really interesting. It's really illuminating trans experience from a Chinese American and mixed heritage perspective, while also really looking at policy advocacy, public health, cultural competency as a concept, and weaving those poetic tales and more journalistic pieces to describe the broader framework for how we can create LGBTQ affirming and particularly trans affirming settings. So that's the idea behind it. Gender Splendor is a book I just recently released, and that is different. It's called Gender Splendor 50 Creative Sparks to Celebrate Yourself at All Ages and Stages. And I wanted to create something that, given the enormous impact on trans, non-binary, and gender expansive folks, the horrible institutional harms that we are experiencing and what that has meant in terms of the impact on mental health, I really wanted to create something that gave people inspiration to really tap into their imagination and tell their truth and reclaim themselves, remind themselves of who they really are. When the world is telling us who we are or refusing to believe who we are, we really have to remind ourselves of our brilliance and our resilience and how we survived. How to deal with the fools, how to deal with the people who are up in your face saying obnoxious things or misgendering you, as well as the larger institutions that are oppressing us, education, healthcare, the legal system, employment, all these different ways in which people are experiencing life challenges. And it's been a rough pandemic. I know folks have been through a lot. And so I really wanted to create something that, on the one hand, it could be used as writing prompts, their sparks, their inspiration, but I wanted to be more expansive to any art form that you choose. You might want to sing a song or mold some clay or draw a picture. create a video. There's so many ways that people can create art if they give themselves the permission to do that, right? And so taking those sparks of inspiration and maybe thinking metaphorically, or maybe just seeing where they go with it in terms of art. And that's the idea. So in actuality, I'm doing a book launch and interactive reading coming up on Sunday, April 21st at 2 p.m. in Oakland.
This is the Umbrella Hour with Dr. An and Xander Keg. Our guest is Willie Chang Wilkinson, who has his master's in public health and is an award-winning author, speaker, public health consultant, cultural competency trainer, spoken word performer, and editor-publisher, among many other wonderful accolades. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk. UK.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. An and Xander Keg, and our guest this hour is Willie Chang Wilkinson. Let's pick up where we left off.
So in actuality, I'm doing a book launch and interactive reading coming up on Sunday, April 21st at 2 p.m. in Oakland. So yeah, that's happening at a new arts and cultural space in Oakland, Chinatown called the 510 Firehouse. I'm excited about that, because we'll have an opportunity to really take those creative sparks and just groove out in various art forms. That's the idea.
That's very cool. Can you give us an example of maybe a couple of the sparks, a couple of the prompts that are in the book? I'm remembering one of them was something like, draw your new driver's license or ID card. Like imagine it with your name and the sex and as you want it to be.
That was actually your birth announcement.
Birth announcement. That's right. Birth announcement. Right?
So it's interesting. People often speak as transphobic as if we were born as full grown gendered adults, right? You know, like none of us were born with babies. It's always the media's insert celebrity trans woman's name was born a man. Everybody else was born a baby, right? So really, it's like everybody else, we're born as babies, blissfully unaware of societal expectations about our gender and genitalia. When babies are born, parents and caregivers often send out birth announcements detailing the baby's sex, weight, and length. Instead of size measurements, what character traits would you want to be measured? What genders might you express in your lifetime? Why is it important that people understand the truth of your birth from your perspective? Start with your name was born and celebrate your birth by rewriting your birth announcement with the knowledge you now have about your gender and other information about your entry to the world that is not necessarily visible. Bestow upon yourself any hopes, dreams, blessings, and wishes that your current self wants your newborn self to receive. So that's the first piece. It's a baby, in fact.
That's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
So you have the launch again, and we'll mention that again, but it's also going to be on your website. So people can go to your website and get more information about it. Born on the Edge of Race and Gender. Maybe you could say just a little bit more about just the title of that. What is that referring to? Born on the Edge of Race and Gender.
Well, I'm a mixed heritage person and I'm a trans person who navigated the first 5 decades of my life in what we might call non-binary and then medically transitioned around the age of 50. And then talking about the ambiguity and complexity of mixed heritage and the ambiguity and complexity around being trans. And I described myself as third gender for many years. Though now my gender identity has evolved in that I have transitioned to a male identity and presentation, which is not to say that my gender identity is not still complex. But that was really the idea behind the title, is that I was continually having the experience of people not perceiving me accurately, making assumptions, making inappropriate comments about both my race and my gender. For instance, assuming that I didn't understand a particular cultural experience based on my look, or the experience that many people have of walking into a store where one person's calling them ma'am, one person's calling them sir. I mean, I actually had experiences in the airport where people were going, ma'am, sir, yeah, I got that right. Did I get that right? I got that. You know, they're having a whole conversation with themselves, right? You know? So just talking about it and trying to find the funny a little bit too in those experiences of other people and their own confusion while you're just standing there going, okay, I am still who I am, even if this person does not see me, and that kind of experience. So I wanted to speak to that on a more personal level, but I also wanted to look at, well, what does that mean for us as we create more affirming systems? And why is healthcare access so important, you know?
Yes.
And educational access.
I started testosterone and I was probably 2 years on T, and I was in Berkeley, California, and I went into some restaurant, casual, and they called me miss or ma'am. And I was like, what? Like, of all the, I was sir constantly as a lesbian, like as a dyke. And then all of a sudden, now I'm not, as people can't see me. And I wasn't as manly looking 2 years in on my testosterone. But I was like, what the heck? And somebody said to me, oh, it's Berkeley. They've been trained to not sir the lesbians.
Well, yeah. I mean,
and they thought I was still a lesbian because I was very androgynous looking.
Right. Yeah. 5 months on testosterone, consistently perceived as male in other parts of the country, but not in the Bay Area. So that was interesting. The Bay Area, it's more challenging because people have eyes for it. And then they think, oh, I know who you are. And it's like, well, no, actually not. And that whole concept of miss, like, what is that? To me, I think miss is reserved for, like, if you're 8 years old or something. Like, what is that miss thing? That used to really piss me off. Just the whole concept of it. And then just, of course, being misgendered was something that just became so challenging for me that I ultimately reached a point where I really needed to medically transition. I sometimes get misgendered too, especially on the phone. And that's a challenge, an ongoing challenge for folks who might get read consistently as male or consistently as a gender they identify with, and then not that same perception on the phone. But, you know, this is one of the pieces that I talk a lot about in the trainings that I do, is the impact of being misgendered And how to recover gracefully when you realize you blew it, because mistakes are part of life. And how to apologize effectively in those situations so that you can continue to build rapport with folks. And I think that's something that people really don't understand, because there's no oppression that is quite like being misgendered. And I've worked with people to think about their most vulnerable issue and how do they feel about it when they've experienced microaggressions or oppression around that. How did it feel the first time, 10th time, 100th time? And that's one way for people to dial into this being an oppression, but it's not, there's no comparable experience exactly. And I think it's really this experience of not being seen that is just so challenging, is to feel like you're not being seen and how that interferes with everything. Healthcare access, oh, that clinic, that provider, that whole institution doesn't see me, doesn't get me, doesn't support me. I'm not going back. This is how people fall through the cracks. Or my teacher, my school, my university, they are not seeing me. It interferes with people's ability to learn. It really interferes with access and the ability for people to participate fully in society when we aren't being seen, which is a privilege that the majority of people really can take for granted. Experiencing basic respect. I had an experience, and I know, Xander, you mentioned offline that your father recently passed, and so sorry for your loss. And, you know, we talked for a moment about that because my mother passed about a year ago at the age of 100. She was someone who was a pioneer in her own right as a first grade teacher. She was the first teacher of color in the Berkeley Unified School District when she started in 1949. She really was culturally relevant before her time. But I had this experience around the memorial for my mother, which we had February 2023. It was the date that we would have been having a Chinese New Year's party, because we used to do this for years in big time. We would have like four parties over two weekends. Talk about community, my mother's love for community. We would do Chinese New Year's parties, but that's the date we chose to have the memorial for my mother. And so I had changed my name to Willie when I was nine in fourth grade in 1972. It took my teachers a long time to get with it. Most did not. Some did, but not necessarily consistently. But the first teacher was my fourth grade teacher, and she got it some of the time. My fourth grade teacher and my mom were colleagues and friends for many years because they taught at the same school. And then eventually my fourth grade teacher became the principal of this school. So she knew my name was Willie since the time I was nine. And we had actually had a conversation at some point in the 90s when she was looking for an evaluator. And we talked. She knew my name was Willie. She was also in touch with my mom. In the course of preparing for the memorial, there was a page on the mortuary site where people could leave memories. And so my fourth grade teacher left a memory that both misnamed and misgendered me. So I wrote her a letter thanking her for the memory that she shared and diplomatically reminding her that I changed my name to Willie when I was a student in her fourth grade class, and informed her as well that I had medically transitioned. And I asked her nicely if she could please rewrite her note using my correct name and pronouns. Well, she responded by writing me a letter, the date of my mom's memorial, saying that of course she knew my name was Willie, and very defensively saying that she knew about names and pronouns because she was an educator and that she was not going to attend the memorial. So she chose not to apologize to me it was a missed opportunity to really make that right. But also she missed the opportunity to pay respects to my mother, her friend and colleague for decades, and really took offense that I requested that she correct her misstep. So, here I am 50 plus years later, still dealing with the impact of a lack of fundamental basic respect. You know, this simple acknowledgement of my identity, a privilege that cisgender people take for granted, right? And as trans people, we're often vilified for having the audacity to ask for basic respect, that we're continued to be treated as an inconvenience. So this is why I wrote this book, Gender Splendor, because it's about taking those microaggressions, taking those challenging situations and finding that way to transform it in art form. Because there's a way in which we have a sense of control and accomplishment when we can turn something negative into something beautiful, right? Something creative, something that feels good to do that's about our own expression rather than the impact of other people's stuff.
Absolutely. And well, I want to say thank you for the condolences about my father. It was a week ago.
Yeah.
It's in the day where we are recording this. And my dad used to come to meetings with me, like FTM.
Oh, FTM, yeah.
Meetings in San Francisco and even in San Diego when I started them, when I moved down there. And he came to Gender Odyssey with me 1 year and we presented. It was me and my dad and then Jack and his dad. And so both Mexican fathers, trans sons, slight difference. Both of our fathers were military. And so there were slight differences in how our families had been, but basically Mexican Catholic families. And we did a presentation at Gender Odyssey together. And he was always very supportive when I was lesbian and just as supportive, if not more, once I transitioned by being more involved. But, you know, it's probably because as a lesbian, he was coming to the lesbian holiday potlucks for people who on Thanksgiving and things when they couldn't go home. So my dad would be like the only parent at the lesbian Thanksgiving potluck. And so it's a really wonderful set of memories that I have about his involvement and so many of my friends who met him and had a good experience of him being kind and encouraging. And so I've been hearing a lot of that. It's been really wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Willie, was it the same for you as it was for Xander, with friends reaching out to him, remembering fondly of his dad? Did you experience that with your mom?
Well, there were some students who said that she was their favorite teacher throughout their entire education, including college. And she was their first grade teacher.
Wow.
She was a wacky, beloved teacher who really got shy first graders to open up by joking around with them. So she rode a hippopotamus or a camel to school. She lived in a treehouse. The camel always got lost. That's why she was always late. Just those things were some of the legend of my mom, but she would teach them how to use chopsticks and take them to Chinatown. And her signature work was really the mathematics of Chinese paper folding. How she could use manipulatives to teach young people in primary grades about fractions and so forth. So that was the way that she brought culture into the classroom.
That's very cool. It's like, it's so beyond me. I have no understanding of what you just said. I was a special ed kid, so I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. But I love the concept of bringing paper folding into mathematics. Like, that's just brilliant.
It gave young children an opportunity to develop spatial awareness, small muscle coordination, and learn about measurement and vocabulary skills while using paper to fold into objects that they could then play with, 3D geometric objects. She had standing room only crowds when she would teach this stuff at conferences at CELMR, the California Mathematics Council. So, you know, that was her thing. She thought there wasn't enough math workshops for the primary grades, and that's what she was doing.
This is the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. We will be taking our second break. We will return short.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. In case you are just joining us, this is the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour is Willie Chang Wilkinson. Let's get back to where we left off.
How was your mom, Willie, around the work that you were doing and also just your being part of LGBT community? How was your mom with that?
Well, you know, my mom gave me a very hard time from the minute I was born. She did not like my mixed look, and I showed my trans self before I could speak. I was a young trans child at a time when there was no conversation that was positive. There were no resources, and certainly no one was talking about how to deal with this in the family or how to create trans-affirming schools. She, I think, had a lot of shame about me as a trans person, which interestingly, in the last 10 or 15 years of her life, she got dementia, and that really changed things in that she no longer had as much of a concern about me being trans. And she just saw me as this loving human being who was there for her. And it really gave me an opportunity to have a very special relationship with her when that really left, this idea that I was somehow an embarrassment or that I was not a full human being because I was trans. So she loved that I was doing speaking engagements and trainings around the place. She was like, how many states have you been to? She loved that I was doing that, and she was very much proud of me, but I think she had conflicted emotion around the fact that I was trans. I changed my name when I was 9. It took her 15 years to get with my name change, and she still misgendered me throughout her life. It was something that was hard for her to really make a change around. But at the same time, I felt her genuine love. My mom was someone who was very adventurous and a community-oriented person, and I'm so much like her in that way. I want to try things. I want to do things. I want to go for it. And I love working in community, and I think we share so much of that, those values and that personality, just being engaged with the world. My relationship with my mom was complex, as a lot of people's relationships can be with their parents. And I love my mom very much and appreciate her for the many things that she taught me. And I know that me being trans was a challenge for her, but in the last 10 years or so of her life, she kind of forgot about me being trans. And that was an interesting experience to have, because I would see those movies, you know, like Moonlight. And there was this one year, there was a bunch of movies that came out where the mom apologized to the child for abusing them, for being queer. And I knew I wasn't going to ever get that. But what I did experience was this real sense of loving connection that we really had.
That's really beautiful. One of the things I went through with my father is, as an only child, he forgot I was his child because I'm his daughter, but I'm a trans man, right? So he forgot he had a son, and he was wondering where his daughter was. And I had a conversation with a social worker who specializes in working with families, caregivers in particular, of people with dementia. And I said, have you ever worked with somebody like me? And she said, no. And I said, well, you've heard my situation. I just described it to you, like I just said to you now. What would be your advice? What would be a way to handle it? Because I know I'm not supposed to say to my dad, Dad, don't you remember I transitioned? You just don't say that to somebody with dementia, right?
Right.
And she said to me, well, how would you feel? And what do you think about asking your father something like, oh, well, tell me about your daughter. Or when was the last time you saw your daughter? Or something like that. Mm-hmm. What does your daughter do? She said, do you think you'd be comfortable asking your father that question? And I'm like, absolutely. And she said, how rare is it that a person gets to hear their parent talk about them in that way? They don't think they're talking about you to you. They're talking about you to a total stranger. And I thought, yeah, I can definitely do that. I wouldn't be bothered by that at all. It might actually be quite beautiful to hear my dad tell me stories about me from his perspective that he's never shared with me before. I've wondered if there were other trans people that have had a similar experience, but so far I haven't run into anybody. Did you ever have that with your mom where she was completely unable to identify you as her child and started telling you about you?
No, fortunately, my mom remembered who I was. But I know this is a very complex condition that people have different experiences. She remembered who I was. And there were times when she was speaking about me to her caregiver that made me wonder if she had forgotten that I was trans a bit, maybe at moments. But she definitely knew I was her son. Or no, my mom could tell you in detail things that happened in the 40s. Certainly, the long-term memory remains. And I think it's an interesting conversation for trans people who are experiencing dementia with their parents because it takes so many different forms and that experience can be very different. My mom couldn't remember what happened 5 minutes ago, but she could remember what happened decades ago.
Yeah, it is a difficult thing to witness. I can definitely concur with that. It has been so wonderful catching up with you and hearing about your new book and the success that you've been having. Remind us of those two events that are coming up.
There's the Gender Splendor book launch and interactive reading coming up on Sunday, April 21st at 2 p.m. at the 510 Firehouse, 815 Alice Street in Oakland, Chinatown. And that's free. And then also, I do want to mention that we're planning an API Transfusion Summer Bash the July 4th weekend in Oakland. So this is API Transfusion provides an opportunity for multi-generational Asian and Pacific Islander trans masculine individuals to support each other, build family and community, develop self-acceptance and self-confidence, share resources, and feel cared for and energized to live authentically and with pride. So we're going to have some workshops, we're going to have some fun hangouts, and really an opportunity to foster resilience in the face of ongoing life challenges, build community, do that brother, sibling, uncle connection that we do. So that's exciting. That's coming up. And we're going to have some excellent Asian food.
That sounds great. Especially the food part.
Yeah right? The hangout, the storytelling. We have confirmed presenters and performers. So it's exciting that it will bring the community together again. It's been a while.
Yeah. You mentioned this firehouse. Where is it in Chinatown?
So it's on Alice Street between 8th and 9th in Oakland, Chinatown, which is great because it's accessible by BART, public transportation, right there in Oakland, Chinatown. And it's a new arts and cultural space that is still getting the word out about it. Not that many folks know about it yet, but it's very queer and trans friendly. And it's a nice space with multiple levels. Part of it is ADA accessible. The space that we're going to be in is ADA accessible.
Did it used to be a fire station?
Yes, it did, but not since the 60s.
There you go. Okay. For people who are unfamiliar, the 510 is the area code for Oakland, California. So I was like, 510 Firehouse, was it a fire station? There you go.
Well, Willie, we hope to have you back again. So if you write another book or whatever it is you're doing in your lifetime, let us know.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation. It's so great to connect with you both. And here's some of your stories. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Willie. You've been listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. Our guest this hour was Willie Chang Wilkinson. We hope you join us next time. And thank you for listening to the Umbrella Hour.